joining like this with others, especially in orientation towards and honoring of and in exploration of the truth. So as I've mentioned each week, this my idea for this time is that it really be your time, that it be a chance for you to ask your questions, explore whatever is really happening for you, for me to possibly offer some perspective, some helpful ways of looking at that. So if there are, I'll just pause a little bit here and see if there are any questions that are up for people. And you can either type it in as most of you know, or you can raise your hand and I will let go of the mic. And I'll also just once more put on here my email address, because it's also fine if you know if a question comes up during the week, if something that you're just pondering, wondering, confused by, inspired by, and you'd like to have that be the focus of this gathering, then you can email me anytime during the week and I will address that. Please, if you do email me that way, just mention that you are offering it as a question or a suggestion for a topic of this weekly satsang on Wednesdays. And I know what that's like when there are no questions. It's actually sometimes a really good sign. So, I can still talk. That's something I'm good at. So I will. I'll launch into a topic, and then if someone, if either what I'm speaking triggers a question, or the question just comes up on its own, just go ahead and raise your hand and/or type it in, and either I might not see it right away, but I'll catch it out of the corner of my eye and respond also to your question, or your concern, or your sharing. Oh, great. Ken says meditation has been much easier. So, just as a starting point, I've been kind of mentioning this here and there in the first couple satsangs, that something that I just find intriguing and helpful, incredibly helpful in sorting out the paradoxes that come with any deep and subtle and thorough exploration of our experience, of our true nature. And that is the idea that there are different levels of truth, that the truth has, in a sense, these different levels, different dimensions, you could call them, that can at times appear to be very opposite, very contradictory, and yet they can be simultaneously true. And the simple metaphor I like for that, that we're all kind of familiar with, or at least all can pretty much understand, is the experience you have if you step outside on a cloudy, rainy day. As you're standing there on the surface of the earth, you look up and the sky is gray, there's rain falling, it's relatively dark compared to a sunny day. And yet, if you were to get into an airplane and fly up above that exact same spot, up above the clouds, then you would discover that the sun was shining and the sky was blue. And if you had the opportunity to get into a rocket ship and once again fly up above that spot, only beyond our atmosphere, up into outer space, at that point you would experience that the sky was black and that the sun never set, and there was really no weather because there is no atmosphere up there. And those three levels of experience are all simultaneously true. It just depends on where you're experiencing the clouds, the rain, the sun, the sky, the atmosphere from, either underneath, above, beyond, and yet they all still exist. All three perspectives still exist. They all still are true at the level at which they are experienced. And so knowing that the sun is shining above the clouds does not really mean that you don't need an umbrella when you go out on a rainy day. The two truths are, it can seem contradictory, but they're actually complementary or at least simultaneous. And a nice thing to say also here is that just because they're both true, and even if they are in a sense complementary, it's part of what makes up the whole of our experience of weather and sunshine and so forth, to have these different levels, it doesn't mean that they're always the same size. And so the truth of the rain, of the cloudy, rainy storm overhead, is actually a smaller truth than the truth of the blue sky. Because once you get up above the clouds, you will be able to perceive that the blue sky extends way beyond the boundaries of the clouds. And of course, if you were able to fly up into outer space, you would see that the blackness of infinity is a much, much bigger truth than the experience the person is having who is standing down on Earth with their umbrella. And so these different levels of truth, that's a fairly simple metaphor to understand how this all applies. And where it gets interesting is when you apply this to all the different spiritual teachings and perspectives and teachers and all the, again, seemingly paradoxical things that are shared about our true nature. And to consider that they may all actually be complementary, not contradictory. They all may be different levels of the actual truth of what's happening here, what is true about us, about life, about consciousness, and that they don't necessarily contradict each other. They can both be true at the same time. And actually, I know when my wife was doing this time, her, by the way, my wife is Gina Lake, for those of you who were able to join her when she was on at this time of the week. I know that she would often read from one of her books and then kind of comment on it as she went along. And so I'm going to do something similar, but I'm actually going to read from someone else's writing. It's a friend of mine. His name is Timothy Conway. And here I'll there. I guess I lost the mic. Not sure where I cut out. Yeah, I was clicking around trying to get the room owner specified only admins can post URLs. Okay, so I guess I can't post it. His website is enlightened-spirituality.org. And Tim Conway, I'm going to read something from his website. And again, if somebody has a screen large enough where they'd like to kind of see what I'm reading at the same time, they can go to enlightened-spirituality.org/3:levels-of-non-dual-reality.html. Hopefully you'll be able to just follow along as I read it. He has, by the way, that whole website, the enlightened-spirituality.org, is quite remarkable, quite extensive. He is a wonderful and clear and deeply thoughtful spiritual teacher. So this page that I'm going to read from talks about the three levels of non-dual reality, the three levels of reality. And yeah, that's correct. The website, the web address postage is correct. And then maybe you could even just search on there for three levels of non-dual reality to get to the actual page. Yes, so just reading from that page, most humans view their situation in the conventional non-mystical way, treating whatever happens as concretely real and to be judged as good and bad, etc. By contrast, a growing number of spiritual teachers and disciples in the New Thought and Advaita or non-duality movements of our era have become boxed into a viewpoint which constrains them to see whatever happens only as the perfect manifestation of divine will, or else as nothing really happening. Such persons abandon all capacity for evaluating phenomenon in any constructive or meaningful way. Now, this is a really interesting point that Timothy's making here, because he's suggesting that you can get boxed into the bigger truths of the perfection of everything, that everything is divine will, or that even beyond that, that nothing ever really happens. And those are like the, in my little metaphor, those are like the blackness of outer space. Those are immense, infinite truths, beyond our even our ability really to hold in our mind. And yet, we don't normally think of being boxed in by infinite space. But if we're boxed out of the conventional view, if we're not able to really, in a functional way, hold the more conventional view where things are good and bad and helpful and not helpful and that kind of thing, then even though it's a very big box, it still is limiting us. It's still preventing one level of truth from being experienced. So, continuing with Tim's writing, yet our situation is not so one-dimensional as these positions would hold. And an expansive, truly liberated way of talking about reality will involve more dimensions. A threefold model of non-dual reality, I've suggested, has been found by many people to be quite helpful in accounting for all levels of our experience. We can identify the three levels of non-dual reality as level three, the pragmatic level of mundane reality and conventional experience. So, in my little metaphor, level three is the person standing on the ground, the pragmatic level, the down-to-earth, mundane reality, conventional experience. So again, Tim says the pragmatic level involving the appropriate and inappropriate, helpful and harmful, skillful and unskillful, right and wrong, justice and injustice, pleasant and painful, and so forth. Now, level two, the psychic or heavenly soul level of reality, these are his terms, psychic, spiritual, you could call it, yields the realization or epiphany that whatever happens is ultimately perfect. Because whatever occurs is the exquisite manifestation of divine will for the sake of all souls eventually coming home to God realization. Further, here it is realized that all souls have essentially always been immortal, innocent, free, and radiant with divine bliss and love, prior to and beyond their karmic entanglements on earth and in any lower subtle realms. So this again, so now level two is kind of, it's stretching it always to make exact parallels with a metaphor, but I love metaphors, so I will do that. The level two is kind of like the beautiful blue sky above the clouds, that no matter what the weather is happening down there on the surface, it's always beautiful, it's always sunny, there's always that sense of everything being perfect. And that this is again often the level of truth that a lot of spiritual teachings, a lot of spiritual teachers point to this level. And there actually is another level. He calls it level one, the absolute level of reality, wherein it is realized that whatever happens in the play of manifestation is a dream. So nothing is really happening. There is no multiplicity, only the non-dual singularity of God or pure infinite awareness is truly here. This divine self is absolutely real as the soul reality, the soul identity, prior to or beyond all worlds, souls, events, experiences. And I'm sure many of you have encountered teachings pointing to this absolute level of reality, or possibly experiences where you experienced what is beyond all manifestation, all appearances. And so that is level one in his plan, in his model. And again, going back to my little metaphor, it kind of corresponds to the infinity of empty space, nothing happening, pure, peaceful stillness. And it is the, in a ultimate sense, it is the biggest truth. Everything that happens comes and goes within that empty space. Even what we refer to when we're talking about either the lowest level, the pragmatic level of mundane reality, or the spiritual level of perfection, is happening within that space. The space doesn't stop where the atmosphere and the earth begins. And the space is unharmed, unaffected. It is such a vast and infinite truth that it's just not touched even really by the experiences on the other levels. And yet, and this is continuing with Timothy's words, these truth levels are all simultaneously true. Level one, where there's only God, only the one reality, is absolutely true. Whereas level two and level three, both pertaining to the realms of multiplicity or duality, are relatively true. Level three pertains to the situation here on earth and in the lower subtle realms, whereas level two pertains most directly to the highest heaven realms. Again, in my little metaphor, up above the clouds, where the weather doesn't affect you. When we don't honor together all three of these levels or aspects or dimensions of reality as being simultaneously true, we tend to get caught in a constricted viewpoint. So for instance, if we ignore the conventional level, level three in this model, preferring to only see that everything is perfect, level two, or that nothing is really happening, only God is real, level one, we can easily fail in morality, compassion, and empathy, falling into an insensitive apathy, ignoring the rampant forms of injustice that inflict pain on sentient beings. Furthermore, denying level three may lead us to mistakenly believe that being discerning or critical, i.e. critiquing any form of thinking or behavior in the field of politics or spirituality, etc., is being negative or deluded or coming from the head, not the heart. When actually a true sage utilizes both head and heart in the context of awareness. Yet those are themselves negative judgments or a critique of being critical, being discerning. It is a limited position that violates true freedom by constraining us to always only view whatever happens as perfect and beyond reproach, or as nothing really happening. Again, to hold on to such a position is to constrain ourselves to a unilevel or one-dimensional limited view of the total of reality. So this is the, I'm interjecting here, this is the point that to only hold on to level, the higher levels of truth, the bigger truths, and to deny the relative level of our daily lives is also limiting. It's also not a complete liberation, a complete freedom. It is, in my sense of things, the ideal is a flexibility, is a total flexibility to move between these different levels, to shift into whatever level of truth is actually useful and functional in this particular moment. Just to give some really simple practical examples, to hold this viewpoint that everything is perfect could lead to deciding that driving on tires that have no air is perfect. I mean, they have no air, that's perfect. I'll just get my car and head on down the freeway riding on the rims and tearing up my tires because, hey, it's all perfect. Or, it's easy to come up with, kind of silly examples where, there's a fire on your kitchen stove, on top of your kitchen stove, and, well, it's perfect. The fire is perfect. It's all perfect. Everything is unfolding according to God's will. So I won't bother to put out the fire. I'll just, let the fire have its way with my house, with all of my belongings, and maybe with my pets and children. Now, I'm laughing because, it's a little bit rare for people to be so caught in this kind of box of expanded truth that they actually are in complete denial or avoidance or dysfunctional kind of neglect of their practical reality. And so and yet if you've been around the spiritual block of it all, you will have experienced people who I love is they often kind of selectively apply their absolute truth or their sense of perfection. And so when they don't want to do something, then they say, well, it's all perfect. And of course, if they want to do something, then they kind of like are able to sort of bridge the truce and say, well, it's perfect that I want to have another bowl of ice cream. If I'm wanting to have another bowl of ice cream, that must be perfection also. So I will have another bowl of ice cream, even though actually the empty bowl of ice cream is also perfect. So this is a thing, when you hold any level of truth as the only level of truth, then you get into very convoluted justifications and rationalizations, and you get very tricky with your application of those bigger truths in order to only deal with the things you want to deal with on the relative level. And so that's a flavor, a taste of how it limits us to only express, only acknowledge, only discriminate, only act from the biggest truth. Now, I probably don't need to go on because where he goes from here very simply is, here I'll read it. Likewise, if we only focus on level three, which is again the pragmatic, practical, lower level. So the higher level is one, the lowest level is three. If we only focus on the practical level, and for instance, the countless injustices and forms of cruelty to living beings, we can become angry political fanatics and vindictive zealots, always finding evildoers somewhere and throwing them out of our heart with a constricted mind of scornful anger and venomous disgust over what those evil persons are doing. And probably everyone here, I can't really speak for everyone here, so I won't, but I can imagine that some people are sometimes drawn into this focus aren't only on level three in the current political climate. And so that's it's easy to see how that limits us. Again, anyone who's been around the spiritual block or had glimpses or profound experiences of these bigger truths of perfection, of absolute emptiness. It knows, I mean, you already know the limits of the narrower perspective and how that limits us. What is often not seen is how those bigger perspectives can limit us. And that's the great beauty of having this kind of model that suggests these different levels, because you don't have to hold them in opposition anymore. You can shift between them as is appropriate. If you back to my simple examples, if you go out into the garage and your car has one of the tires has no air in it, you can for a moment shift out of the perspective of total perfection, of everything is fine just the way it is, and realize that it would be much more functional to either pump up or repair the tire before you actually go driving down the freeway at 80 miles an hour. And then once the tire is full of air and either and you find the leak and get it repaired, then there's no reason to hold on to that sense of things not of, because even if you apply it fully, the sense of perfection applies even to your discrimination, your ability to recognize when something's not functional, like a flat tire. So that's where it gets interesting, is where the two levels intersect, and how sometimes our narrow focus on the practical aspect of things limits us from seeing the perfection, and yet sometimes how a narrow focus on the perfection of things can limit us from being discriminating, from being able to have a reasoned discussion or even argument about what's right and what should or shouldn't be done next. And then, to flexibly shift between those perspectives so that you don't get trapped into seeing someone who is doing something you find is not ideal on a relative level, as fundamentally evil or wrong or bad. Rather, just you're applying that relative perspective to their actions in that moment, not to their actual total reality, their true nature. And so that's this perspective of different levels. I like how he titles his piece The Three Levels of Non-Dual Reality, because sometimes non-duality is set aside or set apart as something, it's like outer space. It's totally different. It's not, has nothing to do with our day-to-day existence. And in fact, it is used as a denial of these practical, functional discriminations and concerns. And again, in truth, that space that you experience when you go up in a rocket ship is here right now on the ground. It's what allows all of these objects to appear. It's what allows the earth and the sun and the planets to all move through space so freely. I love it how if you combine the movement of the earth around the sun and the actual movement of the sun and the entire solar system around the center of our galaxy. The whole galaxy is rotating just like the whole solar system is spinning. And so if you include that movement, and then it turns out that the whole universe is expanding. So the entire galaxy is moving away from other galaxies. And if you add up all of those movements, we are traveling at, I think it's something like 1.2 million miles per hour So, you know, it really, I should, it seems like I should have a seatbelt or something on my little chair here and sitting in front of the computer. I mean, I'm going over 1 million miles an hour through space, just zipping around like a flying at this incredible speed. I mean, where you and I were in space a half hour ago when this talk first began, is now you know, hundreds of thousands, 500,000 or more miles away. It's like way, way, way beyond, you know, the limits of the solar system. Just the spot where you and I first sat down to have this discussion. So thank God that emptiness and space and nothingness is the biggest truth, because we need a lot of space in order to, yeah, there is someone who's also done the calculation, 16,600 miles per second. So again, even as I'm speaking this sentence, we have moved, you know, probably by now over 100, you know, 100,000 miles away from where I first started saying this sentence. Someone said I'm getting dizzy. The reason it doesn't, you know, it doesn't make us dizzy is that it's always relative, and all of the objects surrounding us, including the atmosphere and the ground and the trees and the computer and the chair and you know, you folks, wherever you are on this same planet as me, you know, we're all moving together. And so it's kind of like how two people inside a jet airplane sitting on opposite sides of the aisle can toss a ball back and forth, and there's no problem because they and the ball and the air inside the airplane are all going at the same speed. So there's no problem. If you took the roof off the airplane, if the top was off the airplane, then you throw that ball, it would go flying out the back of the airplane. So fortunately, we're all moving together at this moment. But again, the point is that the biggest truths are the biggest truths. This, not just physical space, but this infinite, empty, pure potential of existence, of infinity. It's pure potential. It's not doing anything. Nothing is happening. That is the biggest truth. Nothing is happening. Nothing has ever happened. Later in that, in this piece, Timothy Conway talks about a, here I'll read it, a story from a let's see if I can find this. I can't find it, but it basically says, you know, you could describe every story as, you know, two unborn twins get on an animal that was never, a species of animal that was never created, and travel on an non-existent path and never arrive. It's like that's the ultimate view. That's the deepest view. It's all a dream. It's all an imagination. It's all a projection of that pure potential, kind of like a hologram into a dreamlike substance. But to hold that view, exclusively, to deny the dream has any reality is limiting. My favorite definition of illusion is an illusion is something real that appears to be something else other than what it is. So within this limitless, infinite space, emptiness, pure potential, that pure potential itself appears as both, you know, as the relative levels, like you said, the practical down-to-earth level is relative, and also the heavenly realms, the sense of perfection, the sense of how everything is unfolding in some beautiful, infinite design, some perfect, where everything is just the way it needs to be. That those two are illusions, but they're made up of the same reality as the infinite, as the pure emptiness. And so neither one, none of the above, needs to be left out. Yes, what I said about illusion is that illusion is something real that appears to be something else other than what it is. So if you think of a great example is the illusions created by a good magician, a good stage magician. The smoke and mirrors that they use to create the illusion are real smoke and real mirrors, but they create the illusion that the magician is sawing a woman in half. So the illusion is real, it's just not what it appears to be. And so our humanness and our divine kind of spiritual nature, they're both real, and yet to a degree they are also an illusion. They are not ultimately what they appear to be. And nonetheless, while the illusion is happening, again, it limits us to hold a narrow perspective that because they're illusion, that therefore we can deny them, or we can say that they don't matter. The illusion of matter matters. And so as long as there's a rock, you're experiencing a rock as a rock, it matters whether you stub your toe on it. And of course, ultimately, there is no rock, there is no toe. Both are true. Neither one contradicts the other. And it's just an even greater degree of liberation when you can move freely between these different levels. The flexibility. And so right now you can just sense to what, I mean, I'm going to assume that everyone has some capacity right in this moment to sense their physical reality, the pragmatic existence of the chair or couch or whatever that you're sitting on, the sounds of my voice, which are happening in physical reality. There's no question that as much as they are purely illusion, that they also are happening, that they have some reality. And so you can sense that level of reality, and when it's appropriate, respond to it. When it's appropriate, discriminate it. When it's appropriate, make hopefully lightly held judgments. Again, if there's this flexibility between the different levels, then when you do have a judgment, you hold it lightly. You just are able to also discriminate how useful that judgment is, how appropriate, how relevant it really is to the moment. And so again, you know, making a judgment of a flat tire as not ideal, not useful, is something you can hold lightly and respond to and take action to correct. And once the tire is repaired and full of air, then you can even hold lightly the judgment that, oh, that's a great tire, I like Michelin, those are good tires. And so you can just let that perspective be held lightly. You don't have to, it's a funny thing to say, you don't have to be in denial that your tire is flat just because it's a Michelin. Just because you think Michelins are the best, you know. If you hold either judgment rigidly, then it will limit you. Someone typed, I prefer Bridgestone. Fair enough. Especially if you hold it lightly, then it's a perfectly valid. You know, all of the perspectives, all of the truth that we have accumulated about the physical world and about human beings and about other people, and that is, they're all valid. They're all useful at some point. And they also are incomplete. That's another way of putting it. So right now, at the same time as that you are sensing this wonderful multiplicity of physical reality. I mean, I'm just sitting in my office, but there's a window and there's all this stuff in my office, all these, you know, plants and pieces of furniture, and there's a piece of stained glass that hangs in my window of my office, and then, oh my God, you know, you look out the window, there's trees and blue sky and hills and sounds out there. So you can experience this incredible multiplicity on this pragmatic, practical, physical level of reality. And also, possibly, in the exact same moment, sense a kind of perfection, a kind of beauty that underlies that multiplicity, a kind of heavenly realm is a good term for it. Someone typed in, well, first they said free tires are the best. That sounds good. And again, valid, true on the relative level. And then he said, I only look in the mirror, and there I am. Yeah, so this is starting to move into that, what Timothy called level two, this sense of perfection of the spiritual reality underlying and permeating and transcending this physical reality. And how it is everything, all this multiplicity is a reflection of, or a further expression of, another expression of our oneness, of our ultimately connected oneness. And so there's no contradiction. I can experience the multiplicity and, to some degree, kind of in a sense, it's like having one foot in the world and one foot out of the world. I can also, right this moment, and you can possibly also sense right this moment, the joy, the peace, the love that is flowing from this bigger reality. It's like the sun shining above the clouds, illuminating right through the clouds, and how that can fill us with a sense of presence, a sense of completeness. That's where true happiness, satisfaction, pleasure, love, peace, clarity, understanding, it all comes from that bigger truth, that more fundamental truth of perfection. And so these aren't contradictory, these two different levels. And there's no contradiction. I started to say earlier that I always find it interesting when I get into discussions with people who are very, you know, rightfully enamored of non-duality, enamored of these bigger truths, and they're having, you know, these profound experiences of perfection or of emptiness. And they refer to something on the more practical, pragmatic level as being not non-dual, not part of the oneness, which is, in a sense, totally illogical. How could something not be part of the oneness? If there's something that's not part of the oneness, then it's not oneness. There's just no way around that, that logic. So, here we are with these two levels. The third level is always kind of that third level of emptiness. It's a very strange level to ever even try to speak about. It's a mystery. Someone typed in mystery. The third level is where it gets really mysterious. The third level is like the kinds of discoveries they're making now in physics about space and time and where all the rules are in level one, and all the rules are in level three, the bottom level, and all the rules are in level two. They don't really apply anymore when you get to pure potential, pure emptiness. In fact, the whole realm of physics is another beautiful example of these different levels of reality, because it turns out that the kind of physics that we all grew up with and that we all take for granted, it's called Newtonian physics, where gravity works, and if you throw a ball in the air, you can calculate its path based on all the physical forces applied to it. That the principles, the rules, the basic things that determine how a ball flies through the air don't actually apply when you get into very great distances. And that there's all kinds of strain, like space itself bends, and motion affects time. And then strangely enough, when you also go into the very smallest levels of reality, physical reality, I think that's maybe where we're starting to glimpse through the veil, glimpse through that level of reality. Anytime you look way out into space, or you look very closely into, into the subatomic particles and the phenomenon that they are able to perceive happening at those extremely, extremely small levels, then the illusion of this practical, pragmatic, physical world starts to waver. It starts to have a kind of illusory quality, of almost like a mirage of things not quite seeming or appearing the way you would think they would at that level. And so the rules at the subatomic level are even stranger. There's just weird, totally weird stuff where objects can appear, physical particles can appear out of empty space and disappear back into empty space in a fraction of a second. And where did they come from? Where did they go? it's like that pure potential just pops into existence as an appearance, as a physical reality, and then pops right back out of existence again. So I was going to kind of see if there was some way to lead a experience, suggest that along with the multiplicity of physical reality that you're having experiences of right now, and still a multiplicity, when you get to the kind of perfection level, there's still a sense of these now very subtle and yet distinguishable. You can still discriminate between joy and peace. They're the same, but they're also, they also are different. There's also a subtle sense in which we are, when we're experiencing joy, there's this like bubbly, expansive, and alive, very alive energy, very energetic, and has a lot of movement in it, even though it still is part of this very transcendent perfection, true joy, not just this kind of superficial happiness, which actually comes still from our pure true joy. It's just we probably are holding an idea that it, that it's like a conditional joy, a conditional happiness. And so that keeps it fairly superficial and temporary. But true joy is definitely, at this more subtle level, at this different level of reality. And so is peace. And peace, I mean, peace is not a bubbly place. It's not a place where there's this sense of expansion and energy and, upliftment, No, peace is, I think, more on the boundary with emptiness, with pure potential. And so it still has qualities. It's still like something, in some traditions, peace is associated with the color black. And yeah, black is the absence of all other colors, but there's still a quality to it. Whereas emptiness, my favorite definition of emptiness is whatever you imagine nothing to be, and then take that away also. So if you imagine nothing as being black, take away the blackness. If you imagine nothingness as being like clear space, take away the clarity, take away the space. If you imagine nothingness as this long moment or eternal time where nothing happens, then take away time. Take away the length of it. Someone typed, as hard as I try, I cannot imagine nothing. Exactly. So whatever you imagine, if you do imagine something, then that's not nothing. So that's about as close as I can get to, kind of experientially inviting that first level in Timothy's. I think I would naturally number them the opposite, but he says level three is the lowest level. Level one is the level of emptiness. And that's about as close as I can come with words. I don't know, I keep trying. It's more like poetry. Does nothing have a visceral feeling? Here's the thing, it does as you approach it. It does as you're dropping into it. And then when you actually arrive, there's no feeling and there's no place that you've arrived at and there's no one who has arrived, and there is and there's a sense that there never were any feelings and there never was anyone to have those feelings. And again, whatever that evokes in you, take that away also. It's a very, from the other levels, as you're approaching it, there's a sense that it would be very dry or not very interesting. In fact, we often turn away from it because why would you spend a lot of time, exploring nothing? I used to use the metaphor, if you're looking for your car keys, and you open a drawer and there's nothing in the drawer, we usually don't spend that long looking in that drawer. We stop looking because there's no car keys and there's not even a pair of scissors. There's not even, some silverware. There's nothing in that drawer. And so we close the drawer again. We don't stand there and stare into an empty drawer and notice, like, what is that? What is that strange, space and peace? Those are qualities. Those are qualities. Awareness. Someone said, why pay attention to awareness? Seems boring. Yeah, these are qualities, the most subtle and fundamental qualities of reality. But they are not actually... They still are, in a sense, an appearance, an illusion. And so the purpose, to directly answer the question, why pay attention to awareness, is that's, while there's nothing I can say, there's no way to evoke an experience of what lies beyond awareness, what is the source of awareness itself. There's no way to actually direct awareness there. The person wrote, it's not really a question, I understand, but I'm just enjoying talking about it. The best that a question like that or a pointing like I'm doing can do is bring you right to the boundary. When you focus on space, if you actually did take some time and stare into an empty drawer, or you know, you can experience it just looking up into the night sky, or sitting on the rim of the Grand Canyon, or looking out over the ocean, anything that gives a sense of this vastness, a sense of space. You can also experience it just sitting and turning attention to awareness. That will bring you to, again, to the boundary of the illusion. Beyond the boundary of the illusion, there's nothing to see. There's no one to see it. But by bringing yourself to the boundary, you're closer to the reality beyond the boundary. And it may, in a sense, touch you. I often have used the metaphor that if you go sit at the beach, if you go visit the ocean and sit at the beach, there's nothing you can do while you're sitting there on the beach to actually cause a tsunami. You can jump up and down, you can chant, you can literally sacrifice a live animal, and none of that is going to cause a tsunami. But if you're there, if you're right there at that boundary between land and sea, and a tsunami happens, you're going to get wet. You're going to be swept up in it. And it might not even take a tsunami. It might just take the tide coming in or an unusually large wave. And so when we do these kind of practices of directing attention to awareness, noticing space, you know, in a sense, turning towards that absolute level of reality, we make ourselves available. And sometimes what reaches out and touches us is a very fundamental quality of our true nature, something more in the in-between level, something like peace or joy or love or clarity or a profound insight or a sense of the overall perfection of all things. And other times when you are on that boundary, you drown. You get swept up in a big wave of pure potential. And even then, there's no, even when you've been tossed back up on the shore by this giant tsunami and you catch your breath and you go, what was that? There's nothing you can say about it. All you can remark upon is the profound impact that wave has had, that wave of pure potential, of emptiness, of pure being. You can remark on the impact it's had on you in this relative level of illusion, but there's still nothing you can say about it. You know something happened, or nothing happened, or something nothing happened, and yet there's nothing more you can say. Which is probably a really good place to stop when there's nothing more to say. So looking at the clock, there's literally nothing more to say. And I will release the mic. And as far as a title for this week, we can call it Different Levels of Reality. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.